Good afternoon, this is Pastor Craig for WGH Talk, broadcasting live from the Marion County Fair. I hope you're all having a good Independence Day, and if you've got time, come on down to the fair and see us and take in all that's happening at the fair. It's my pleasure to be sitting in here for the next 2 hours for WGH Talk and have the microphone. So I'll be here from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, and I'll have a couple special guests in the second hour from 5 to 6. And then Scott Spears will be on at 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock tonight. So we've got 4 hours of fun for you here. Just real quick, what's happening here at the fair, if you're coming on down, or if you're already here and you're listening to us, you can see at 8:30 tonight in the grandstand, Rex and Dana, which they have a magic show, and then also the Solo Cup Guy will be there too. Now, I happened to see the Solo Cup Guy when I was walking around in all the food trucks, and he's an interesting person, so that should be quite a time. And then at 10 o'clock, of course, they've got the fireworks, because today's the 4th. Excuse me. So, it's a tradition here. Well, first of all, let me just say that this broadcast from the fair, and all broadcasts from the fair, are sponsored today and in the future by Study His Word Radio with Pastor Craig. Study His Word Radio can be heard by going to the WWGH1071.com and selecting the archive page. Also, you can hear Study His Word Radio's weekly podcast at studyhiswordradio.org. Come on down and have fun at the fair. So one of the things I thought I would do today, since it is Independence Day, is follow in the tradition that they have here at the station with a reading of the Declaration of Independence. So I will just ask you to kind of bear with me while we do a reading of the Declaration of Independence. And it struck me as I was, you know, preparing this week to be here that we're all familiar with the Declaration of Independence and we all know its role in American history. But really, there's a lot more in the Declaration than I think I realized and that most people would realize. So I thought after I read the Declaration of Independence, we might talk for a little while about some of the important aspects about the Declaration and some of the history behind the scenes, kind of a backstage picture that I don't ever remember learning in school. So if you'll give me your attention right now, we're going to read the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, the government are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light or transient causes, and that accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he is utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with many firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such disillusions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to present the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for nationalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judicial powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering, large bodies of armored troops among us. For protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. For transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses. For abolishing the free system of English laws, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant, is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of their circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of humankind, enemies in war, in peace friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the states and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all the other acts and things which independent states of the right may of the right do. And for the support of this declarations, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. So that, folks, is the Declaration of Independence. Now, what I want to do is, they listed out 27 specific grievances against the king. And I kind of want to go over some of those. Actually, I want to go over all of them. But because when I was in school many, many, many years ago, I remember that, you know, the War of Independence was fought over taxation without representation. Taxation without representation. That's why we had the Boston Tea Party, which led to the War for Independence. There's much, much more to that. So I'd like to talk about that today. But let me give you a little bit of background about the document itself first, and some things about these colonies that will help us to understand their list of grievances. When the Americas were getting colonized by various companies, they were called land companies in some cases, that were sponsored by other countries. When they'd come here and set up a colony, they would first establish a charter. And their charter was much along the lines of, similar to, but not nearly as detailed, but similar to our Constitution. It was the charter that basically laid down the laws and laid down the organization, you know, how their representatives, their legislatures would work. So all that type of thing. So they would set up a charter, they would establish laws, and then they and the colonies would have, excuse me, for that colony, they would have a local government that would include a legislature, and there'd be, you know, like a governor or something like that. And so there was a basic legal structure. So that was how the colonies were operating as colonies. That'll give you a little bit of background here when they list some of their grievances that they had for the kings. And so by 1770, the colonists were fairly convinced that Great Britain and King George were taking away so many of their freedoms that there was really a widespread belief in the colonies that this was happening. And so they actually started negotiating with Great Britain. They started negotiating with the king. They, at that time, in the early 1770s, they weren't thinking about war. And as a matter of fact, they didn't want to lead the war. They really felt that they could work it out with the king. But by 1775, it was obvious to the colonists that Britain itself was prepared for war and was preparing for war, and they realized by 1775 that working things out wasn't going to be a possibility. In April of 1775, the first actual fight of the Revolutionary War broke out, and the king of Great Britain, King George, he stated that the reason for the first fight is that the American colonies were in a state of disobedience and an avowed rebellion. So the war was on. At this point, you know, it was obvious to the Americans that they were past the point of negotiations. They had to cut ties with Great Britain. So what they did is, in 1775, they set up the Continental Congress. And this was a Congress of all the colonies sent representatives to work as one body. Previously, the colonies had operated fairly independently of each other, for the most part. But in 1775, they decided they were going to set up the Continental Congress to speak, to represent and speak for all 13 colonies. And they had very strict rules for secrecy that their members had to take an oath to, because they realized, they had abandoned any chance of reconciliation. They were committed to their independence. So they absolutely had to have complete secrecy during this process. June 7th of 1776, a month before the declaration was signed, there was a resolution in the Continental Congress, a resolution to be free and independent. So what they did is they set up a committee of five to write an announcement explaining their reasons for independence. And Thomas Jefferson, as you well heard of, chaired the committee. So on June 11th, 1776, Thomas Jefferson literally went home and locked himself in his home for the better part of 3 weeks, and that's how long it took him to come up with the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. Then he presented it to the Continental Congress for their approval. Quite honestly, if you read accounts by Jefferson, he was very, very distressed that Continental Congress, in his words, said they mangled it. He had spent so much time and so much effort into getting everything just worded right and covering the topics that he felt that they had mangled it. And as a side note to that, this is a rabbit hole I don't really want to go down today, but Thomas Jefferson wrote that he was especially distressed that they removed one of their complaints against the king, which was a complaint blaming King George for forcing slavery, the slave trade, on America. Thomas Jefferson was against slavery, and I realize that, a lot of people say that's the first thing they want to point out about Thomas Jefferson, but he owned slaves. That's a conversation for another day, because Thomas Jefferson really was opposed to it, and there are reasons why he was opposed to it, and there are reasons why he was a slave owner. You couldn't under Britain, if you were a slave owner, you could not just let your slaves go free because you wanted to. It was a very, very complicated process. But anyway, don't want to go too deep in that. So he was upset about that, but he also realized that the time wasn't right to have that conversation, that the issue of independence for the state was much bigger than that. So on July 2nd, 1776, the Continental Congress voted to declare independence, and and it was a text that I read to you. And then 2 days later, on July 4th, they ratified the text, and that's why we celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day. Now, after that was done, they had 200 copies of the Declaration of Independence printed up, and they were circulated throughout the colonies. They were made public for other countries, and then one copy of it found its way to the King of Great Britain in August, roughly a month later. And at that point, now Great Britain had been notified, and the war was on. So that's a little background on the Declaration of Independence to kind of give some framework for their case against the king. So I kind of like to go down through those, because I know we were never taught this in school. And I don't mean for this to sound like a history lesson in school that you have to make up because you were absent that day, but I found a lot of it really, really interesting. Okay, the first complaint. He has refused his assent to laws, or he has, you know, they use a lot of words in here that are not really words that we use today. So he has refused his permission to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the good. So in other words, he didn't want to allow them to have any of their laws as they came up with if it was a law he wasn't in agreement with. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws. Now, let me stop there. When Thomas says his governors, Thomas is actually talking about the lawmakers, the legislators here in the colonies that do what they do based on their charter of the colony. So he has forbidden the legislators to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his permission should be obtained. And when so suspended, he's neglected to attend them. So basically, if they passed a law and he didn't like it, he would suspend it pending his approval, and then he just never gave his approval. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodations of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to those and formidable to tyrants. So basically, large areas of people were not allowed representation unless he gave them the right of representation, but he was refusing to do that. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfort, and distant from the depository of the public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. Basically, the king was making legislative bodies, you know, meet in places that were uncomfortable, that they were unusual, that they were far from where their purpose of doing that was out the people. He has just repeated with manly firmness his right of the people. Basically, he was canceling meetings and dissolving legislative bodies. He has refused for a long time after such dissolution to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers have returned to their people for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. Basically, again, he's been dissolving these legislators and then not allowing them to elect new representatives. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these United States for that purpose of obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing others to encourage their emigrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. Basically, he was blocking all others from traveling to the United States to live in the colonies, and he was not allowing both people to travel and for the people to travel and get land somehow. Basically, he was trying to cut off the supply of people going to America. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his permission to laws for establishing the judiciary powers. This goes back to the charters that they had and they set up. What he was doing was he was blocking justice by refusing to establish judiciary powers. He was not allowing them to elect judges, so therefore they could not you know, legislate justice. They weren't given judges, and they were allowed to elect judges. They could not carry out justice. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of the salaries. In other words, he was complete control of the judges. He would appoint them, and they, you know, they had, with their permission, they operated. And of course, they were paid by him, which is completely different. Today, we elect judges. You know, the judges are answerable to the people by the election. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to embarrass our people and eat out their substance. This is, you know, again, to just control what they are doing in America. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. Basically, he was putting armies in the colonies without their permission, so that there was constantly a British army in their presence. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. In other words, his military, they were not held accountable by anything in the colonies, and their power was superior to that of any of the civil governments. Therefore, the military was like an arm of the king. They had complete and total control and power over the people. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his permission to their acts of pretended legislation. Basically, it's a short way of saying he's got a bunch of illegal laws, won't recognize ours, and we're subject to him no matter what his laws say. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. This is the, you go back a little bit on this list, and they were protesting him having standing armies here without their permission and without any control over them. And then there's this, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. Not only were the armies there, not only were the armies in control, but the residents of the colonies were forced to provide housing for the armies. It wasn't just that they controlled you and they lived in your presence, but they lived in your presence. You had to house soldiers. There was nothing you could do about it. For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Now, to make a little clarification there, Thomas Jefferson used the word murders, but actually what it meant in this writing was any crimes. Any crimes committed by these armies while there against the citizens of the community, they couldn't be prosecuted here. They would be taken home to Great Britain for a mock trial, because basically Britain didn't punish any of its soldiers for any of so-called crimes committed, you know, against the colonists. As far as they were concerned, there weren't any crimes committed against the colonists. For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. The colonies were forced to do trade with Great Britain only after the Boston Tea Party. That was Great Britain's retribution on the colonists for the Boston Tea Party, was no other countries were allowed to trade with the colonies. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. Well, that was what I was taught in school. That is the one, taxes without representation. You're given a tax, you're forced to pay the tax, and you don't have any say about it. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. That's kind of, you know, lots of times you were not afforded a jury trial. For transporting us for pretended offenses. That's the flip previous one. If you were used, you back to Great Britain to stand trial, and as they say, pretend, you know, they were aware of great abuses being taken overseas and being tried. For abolishing free system law in a neighboring province, that would be what they're talking about here, is the abolishing the free system of English laws in the colonies, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. Or in other words, they shut down the system of laws, and Britain expanded the boundaries so that there was a much larger area that they could be in control. For taking away our charters, abolishing most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. Back to what I was saying earlier about how the colonies operated. They had a charter, they had a system of laws, and they had elected officials. So they were semi-autonomous. They weren't completely autonomous, but they were semi-autonomous. And so this is the accusation that they've had those things taken away from them. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with the power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. And, you know, that was, at this point, that was rather kind of obvious that, yes, he was waging war against them. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Again, self-explanatory. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death. I don't know if you knew that or not, or if you were aware of that or not, but yes, Britain sent many, many, many hired guns from various countries to do their dirty work. Desolation and tyranny already begun with the circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages. So that was the not only did he use his own resources, but he used the resources of other countries. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by hand. Okay? So if you were a colonist and you were in the ocean, you could be taken captive by Great Britain and into the army colonies. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Basically, that was, he is inciting the Native Americans to also fight against us, and in his opinion, you know, in the colonists' opinion, it was an unfair fight because the Native Americans, they killed anybody and everybody. So that is the list of grievances that the colonists had against the King of Great Britain. So you can see this was really a very complex piece of, a lot went into this document. A lot was behind the scenes in creating this document. These men took very, very seriously what they were doing, knowing that they were taking on the King of England, and, you know, attempting to be an independent nation. They were taking on his armies. So it was a very, very serious endeavor that they were taking on. And I think sometimes we really lose that perspective of the seriousness and what all really went into the background of this. It's not like a bunch of guys decided in 6 months, hey, wouldn't it be nice to be independent? Let's set up our own country. This was decades in the making. And that's what it culminated in, the Declaration of Independence. So that's our declaration. It was my pleasure to bring it to you today. That's a little bit of the background and the history behind it. And I hope you did enjoy that. I want you to stay with us in the closing minutes here. We're going to be back for another hour. I'll be here behind the mic. I'm going to have a couple of special guests. If you've been a listener to WGH Talk for any length of time, you'll instantly recognize who my guests are going to be next hour. So I hope you will join me then. We're going to be on a little lighter topic. We're going to talk about the fair, and we're going to talk about the 4th of July. I have a surprise guest that may pop in for about 10 minutes, so we should have a lot of fun. Then after I go off at 6, Scott Spears is going to be back from 6 to 8 o'clock, and Sean Kraft will be here. So, folks, don't move away from your smart device, your computer, or anything like that, because you're going to hear a lot of good things. So if you have time, come down to the fair. Stop by our booth. We're in the middle aisle in the Coliseum. So stop by, say hi, give us a high five. We'd love to meet you. Just one last reminder that this broadcast from the Marion County Fair is sponsored by Study His Word Radio with Pastor Craig. Study His Word Radio can be heard by going to WWGH1071.com and selecting the archive page. Also, you can hear Study His Word Radio's weekly podcast at studyhiswordradio.org. And I hope we see you here. Come down, have fun at the fair. I'll be back just after the short little break that we're going to take here at the top of the hour. And so I would encourage all of you to stay tuned, because you never know what you just might hear on WGH Talk. Thanks for being here, folks. I'll be back in a few minutes.